You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The assassination of Abraham Lincoln remains one of our most important moments in our nation's history. But in his latest novel, The Impeachment of Abraham Lincoln, Yale law professor Stephen L. Carter imagines what might have happened had the 16th president survived to see the post-Civil War era, only to face impeachment for some of the actions he took during his presidency. It's published by Knopf, and I'm very pleased it has brought Professor Carter back to our show today. Hello.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Now, weren't your first books all works of nonfiction? Have you decided that fiction works better for dealing with some of the issues that you want to write about?
I would just say that writing fiction appeals to a different part of my brain. My last nonfiction book last year was about President Obama and his views about war, and that's one part of my brain. And this year, it's time to have some fun. And so although I'm often told that the thrillers that I write deal with issues, I write them for fun, and I hope people have fun reading them. And I certainly the idea of Lincoln surviving is one that's tickled the back of my brain for a very long time.
Well, you've said that you've described yourself as an amateur Lincoln buff and that you had been thinking about this very story for a long time.
Well, not this precise story, but I have taught courses at Yale Law School on impeachment. I wrote about Lincoln a couple of papers when I was an undergraduate, and really it was when I was an undergraduate that I began to wonder about if Lincoln had survived, what might have happened, how much of our reverence for him rests on the fact of his assassination. And I should say, I'm a great Lincoln fan, and in writing a book with this title, I'm not suggesting Lincoln should have been impeached or would have been impeached. I just think it's kind of a nice fictional premise to wonder what an impeachment trial might have looked like.
Well, we'll get into those issues in a moment. But do you find the Civil War period a particularly fruitful one for alternate histories? I mean, you and Newt Gingrich and some others have
there's
all
a lot
written
of
books
alternate
that take
history.
Place.
You're absolutely
the
right.
What-if books?
You're right. There's a lot of that alternate history written about the Civil War. And I think the reason for it is that everyone recognizes this was the pivotal moment in American history. This is the most important moment, even now, 150 years later, the nation's ever faced. And everything was up for grabs. And it wasn't clear that things were going to work out. There didn't seem to be a foreordained result. And so it continues to fascinate us in much the way that Lincoln, our greatest president, continues to fascinate us.
Well, he fascinates us to the point where there's a new movie in which he is a vampire hunter.
I actually saw that that movie. I didn't know what to expect. I saw it because so many people asked me about it in interviews, actually. I didn't know what to expect, but I had a good time. I had a lot of fun. And I think that Lincoln appeals to us more and more as the times get more complex, as politics gets more heated, as people are cut down to size on the right and left alike. We like to believe that in the past there were these giant heroic figures, and Lincoln was giant, and he was heroic, but that doesn't mean he was without blemish or flaw.
And he did some pretty controversial things, like suspending habeas corpus and shutting down newspapers he believed were hurting the war effort. Is it hard for some to accept that a president so highly revered did all of those things?
Abraham Lincoln, during the Civil War, gathered more authority into his hands than any president in our history. No one else is close. FDR is probably second, and he's not close to Lincoln in the amount of power that he held. And in fact,
he couldn't sack the Supreme Court. Lincoln might have been able to do it.
Well, Lincoln had it easier. What Lincoln did, so for example, when the Chief Justice ruled that Lincoln's suspension of habeas corpus was beyond his powers, Lincoln just ignored him. He simply ignored the inconvenient order of the Chief Justice. And in my story, what happens is various political opponents of Lincoln, largely in his own party, seize upon these various things that happened in the war and use them as their excuse to try to get him out of the way.
He was shot on April 14th, 1865, which was Good Friday, and in your book, he's revived on Easter Sunday. A little bit of religious
imagery. Yeah, that may have been a little
over
the top. I don't know, but I do begin with the story everyone knows of Booth shooting him, and the difference is he does recover. And my idea was, if he had recovered, given that he had a lot of political opposition, especially in his own party, could I craft a kind of I guess you'd call it a courtroom drama almost around that potential, the potential for impeachment.
Now, why did he have opposition within his own party, the new Republican Party, which later impeached Andrew Johnson, his successor, the vice president, because he wasn't doing what Lincoln had promised?
It's interesting. One thing we tend to forget about Lincoln is that he was very unpopular in the Republican Party. The Republican Party, which, as you say, was a brand new party, was dominated by well-educated men from the Northeast mostly, a couple from the Midwest. And they saw Lincoln, who had no formal education, as this kind of bumpkin, this unlettered Westerner who they thought was not as committed to the anti-slavery cause as they were. They thought he didn't prosecute the war hard enough. And they thought he wasn't as smart as they were. That the easiest way of putting it is they thought he was beneath them. And as late as 1864, not long before the election, a number of them were still trying to find a way to ease him aside to let what they called a fitter man take the chair.
These people who were called the radicals at the time. Now, he's impeached on four counts.
He's impeached on four counts, and two of them are things that I guess we could say are unquestionably true: the suspension of habeas corpus and the censoring of opposition newspapers and occasionally locking up of opposition journalists. When I say opposition, I mean opposed to the war. The other two counts are things that I invented for the story to make the courtroom drama itself more interesting. But part of what I'm doing here is to try to give us a fuller portrait of the man, that to let our admiration of him not keep us from raising questions about some of the things that he deemed necessary, clear violations of Constitution or of statute, things he deemed necessary in order to prevail in the Civil War.
Well, your characters take different positions on whether or not they warranted impeachment. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure if I'd been there, especially being African American, I would have voted not to impeach him. But for me, it's more important that the readers be invited to tackle these questions. And indeed, most of the story is told from the point of view of a young black woman named Abigail Canner, who wants to be a lawyer. This at a time when there were no female lawyers in the United States, and maybe half a dozen black ones, and she herself is conflicted because she reveres Lincoln as the man who won the war and freed the slaves, but at the same time, she also sees some of the problems of some of the means that he used to do it.
You created her because you write there is a persistent misconception today that everyone in the post-Civil War black community was poverty-stricken?
Well, that misconception does exist. Slavery is, to this day, I think, the greatest moral blot in our history, rivaled only by our treatment of the native people of this continent. It's a blot we have yet to remove. At that time, it was very fresh, but there were also tens of thousands of black Americans at the time who were free, many of whom have been free for generations, and their story is one that we rarely see.
But is it likely that we would have a 21-year-old aspiring black lawyer who had just graduated from Oberlin College in Washington at the time?
It's entirely possible. Oberlin, in fact, of the time, it's quite interesting. In those days, known as the Oberlin Collegiate Institute, it trained women and black people alongside white men, which was almost unheard of, certainly unheard of in the colleges of the Northeast at the time. And one of the things it instilled in them was a sense of endless possibility. So in my story, she goes to Washington. She gets a job as a clerk, not a lawyer.
But first she had gone to Ohio to escape the Civil War.
And during the Civil War, to escape. When she comes back, she has her college degree in hand. She's 21. She has a job as a clerk at this firm. They knew she was a woman when they hired her. They didn't know she was black. They didn't inquire if she was black. And she has to fight her way up in the firm, as well as solving various mysteries that revolve around the impeachment trial.
My guest is Stephen L. Carter. His latest book is a novel, The Impeachment of Abraham Lincoln, with the words, a novel, very big on the cover, published by Knopf, in case you were confused. You do have a black character who opposes Lincoln.
I do, and I tried to give some sense of the complexity of the black community at the time. And so, in fact, to take just one example, there are actually a couple of characters. So Abigail Canner is my protagonist. She's 21. She has a younger brother who is named Michael, who's a big radical and an activist and prefers the radicals to Lincoln. He sees Lincoln the same way the Republican radicals do, as too friendly to the South. Lincoln always said we should let him up easy. And Michael, like a lot of radicals at the time, thinks they should be flattened. And so there are a couple of places where Michael and Abigail argue over Lincoln. Michael's a very violent fellow and involved with various violent men as well.
You do play fast and loose with history. Mary Todd Lincoln is dead.
Andrew Johnson, who's the vice president, is dead. And Mary Todd Lincoln is dead under mysterious circumstances, a fact that also looms large as the novel goes on.
You say that most of the dialogue spoken by real-life characters in the novel is taken from quotes actually attributed to them. So there's a certain – people are going to be confused. They're going to read this and they're going to know that some of this is really real history. And then but Mary Lincoln is dead. How did that happen?
Well, you know, I did try. I do a lot of research for my novels generally, but I did more research for this one than for any of the others. And I really tried to be as accurate as I could in reproducing the voices of real people, not only Lincoln, but some of the other great men and women of the era who've left letters and diaries or about whom there are biographies. Lincoln, by the way, I should say, only appears in five or six scenes in the entire story. There are a lot of novels about Lincoln in which Lincoln is the main character. Here, the main characters are those actually working around him in the trial and the various other things that happen in the story.
You admit that some of the anecdotes that you have included in the story, although well documented, have proven to be untrue.
There are a couple of
things. How much of the whole story of Lincoln is myth and how much is actual fact?
Well, we know an awful lot about Lincoln's life, and I was careful not to misrepresent any known fact about Lincoln up to April 14th, 1865. With respect to some of the other characters, I did make some changes in their histories to make them fit better into the book, and I have an author's note at the end, which you've been noting, in which I try to make clear which ones are which.
You also have used real-life speeches from Andrew Johnson's impeachment proceedings.
Well, in designing,
but you put them into the mouths of people who are going after Lincoln.
Well, in the impeachment trial, I wanted to capture a sense of the way that the radical Republicans argued. And so I used some of the same material, even though the charges aren't exactly the same. Some of the arguments are actually very similar. And while Johnson's impeachment trial isn't really the model for this one, this goes in quite a different direction than that one did. Nevertheless, that trial provides a lot of the language and the flavor, one might say.
Without giving anything away, the last page of your book has two of the main characters speculating about what might have happened if Lincoln had died at Ford's Theater. And they conclude that what would have changed is very little. History is larger than any one man, even when that man is Abraham Lincoln. Either way, America would roll on toward empire. Is that you speaking?
Well, it's something I sometimes believe. I often wonder whether history really is influenced by the great figures in history or by the great forces of history. And if you ask me one day, I'll believe one. If you ask me the other day, I'll believe another. No doubt it's a combination of the two.
But as a lawyer, a law professor, looking at Lincoln's presidency, the end result was, of course, the way we all would have liked to have seen it turnout, except some people who still feel differently in certain parts of the country. But how much leeway should we give a president in wartime? And we're arguing something similar right now. We argued something similar with the previous president.
It's such an important question. I wrote a book last year called The Violence of Peace, which was about Obama and war, and some of it was about George W. Bush and war as well. And that's the question I was trying to raise there. President Obama, in his 2009 Nobel address, invited us to look at the actions the United States takes abroad, not only from a legal point of view, but from a moral point of view, to hold us to a standard not merely of legal or illegal, but right and wrong. And I think that's actually crucial when we ask ourselves, when we believe in a great cause, whether it's a war or a political cause or anything else, are there lines we're unwilling to cross in order to prevail? Or once we decide victory is our goal, do all these lines fall away? That's the question each of us has to answer.
Stephen L. Carter is the William Nelson Cromwell Professor of Law at Yale University, where he's taught since 1982, since 1865. He is the author of 8 books of nonfiction. He writes a column for Bloomberg View and is a frequent contributor to The Daily Beast and Newsweek. His latest work of fiction is The Impeachment of Abraham Lincoln. It is published by Knopp. Thank you so much for being with us again.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.